Hello, everyone. I'm Luis, and this is The Debrief, a podcast from Incident.io. Okay, so today marks the last episode in our AI mini-series, and to be honest, for me, it's a bittersweet moment. But if you've been tuning in, you'd know that over the last few weeks, we've been doing a deep dive into our latest batch of AI feature releases. To date, we've covered Assistant, Suggested Summaries, and Related Incidents. Today, we'll be closing it all out with Suggested Follow-ups. And just like those other episodes, we're going to focus on the questions behind the project. So, why we did it? What were we hoping to solve for? What were the unique challenges we faced with Suggested Follow-ups? And finally, how the team actually built it all. I really hope you've enjoyed this series, but if you want to hear more content like this, please reach out to let us know. Anyway, here it is. Here's my conversation with Rob. So Rob, obviously you worked on the follow-ups project. Before we get started, let's just lay the scene out. What exactly are suggested follow-ups?
Cool. So suggested follow-ups are basically us trying to fill in the gap of when you're in the middle of an incident, you think of something you're going to have to do to clean up that situation later on, and you want to jot it down, but maybe you don't, or you mention it in the Slack channel, and then after the incident, you forget all about it. That's kind of like the worst case here is something critical you should have done, and you've forgotten it. And what we wanted to do was see if we could get AI to basically go through everything that's happened, all the discussion that's happened in your incident, and try and suggest things that you mentioned that might have been important in some way. So we want to highlight those things to you, and you can take that decision of whether you want to actually turn them into a follow-up or whether you want to sort of say, nope, I mean, we either dealt with it in the incident or we didn't say that we dealt with it, but we did. Or like, yeah, it's a good suggestion, but we're not going to do that now, and you just get rid of them. But it's mainly around that kind of like enhancing your sort of incident process by having an extra person there just jotting down notes. It's kind of, that's where it started from, was like, can we have something that acts as like another person in the room, just listening, trying to note things down and then bringing that up at the end. And actually, when we first started the project, it was initially actually suggested actions and follow-ups. So it started life as a bit more involved in the incident. So as the incident's going on, being like, oh, did you want to record that as an action? And we steered away from that as we went on, and follow-ups was the thing we focused on because we thought that's a nice contained sort of, as it's after the incident as well, it's not as disruptive. And this is again the theme that we've had through all of our AI, is like, we don't want it to dictate the process for you. We don't want it to get in the way. We don't want to sort of decide for you in this case. It's like an addition rather than a replacement, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. So if I'm hearing this correctly, suggested actions was next because he felt it was a bit too heavy-handed?
Yeah, it was kind of a combination of like the speed of the way AI is at the moment. So the response times aren't amazingly fast for some stuff, and sort of the number of times you'd have to keep trying to ask the models, like, is this an action? Is this an action? Is this an action? It gets a little bit tedious. And we're sort of like, given the signal to noise ratio, when we were looking at these things, it was, we thought, too noisy, too disruptive. It just gets in the way. Whereas the follow-ups, we could kind of concentrate on distilling things down into sort of a few good suggestions and put those at the end, and then someone can pick those up. We've actually had people ask, can we make them more obvious at the end? Because they found them so useful that actually they want it to be really, really in your face that there's these things possibly missed, which has been interesting because we thought perhaps the opposite, that people wouldn't want to see them at all. But I know we internally have found them really useful for, to the point where we will write stuff being like, dear AI, I would love I would love this as a follow-up. And then like when we close the incident, they're there. Because we're just lazy, we don't want to click the buttons and write the ticket.
So, did we find, despite being very noisy, that they were at all useful, even if like you said, the signal to noise ratio was really, really high?
I think it depends a bit on how you work in an incident. I think we work a very particular way, and I imagine every other organization is going to work very differently. So when we're in an incident and someone is leading the incident, we will typically keep people up to date on what we're doing, where we are, what we plan to do. but we won't track those as individual tickets.
Yes.
Have that history of the incident and just be doing it. I think we're sort of very much like, if I've written a thing saying I'm doing it, I'm doing it. I don't need to make a ticket to track it at that moment in time. And we tend to not use actions that much. I know some organizations do use them a lot. So they'll want to try and either through like reacting with an emoji or sort of slash ink action, they'll record those things. And we found that, yeah, for us, it didn't quite sit well when they were sort of coming up like, and it's quite disruptive and noisy in the thing. Even if you reply to someone, that person has just written, I'm going to do this. And then you're coming in and going like, do you want to make an action? Are you going to record that? And you're like, no, I'm doing it. I'm just going to do it. Like, I don't want that sort of disruption. And I think that was the main thing that we were like, this is just mildly annoying when you're stressed and trying to solve something. So
we kind of steered
away from it. We did do a bit of analysis on like previous incidents. Would we have recognized actions? Or I think that part was kind of what led to follow-ups was like, can we look at this and go, someone has said they would do something and we don't know if they did it. And we started being like, you said you would do an action. And then we realized actually most of these things are probably follow-ups.
Gotcha.
And if you've got to the end of an incident and you didn't need to do the thing you said you would, then it's probably a follow-up because we regard actions as something to solve the incident and what's going on. So I think that was kind of that clear distinction for us in the difference of how this should work and what really is of benefit to you in the moment. So yeah.
Gotcha. That makes a ton of sense. So let's get back to follow-ups. In terms of the team, how was the team structured? Who was running point? You know, how many people were on this team? How sort of what were the guidelines or the timetables that you guys set up for yourselves? Did early on you say, we're going to work towards this for 2 weeks, a month? Are we sort of up in the air and very flexible? Just very curious about sort of team structure and sort of delivery timelines, I guess.
Yeah. So I think initially we actually scoped this project alongside the AI Insights. So we sort of had two projects being scoped at the same time. And we actually stopped on follow-ups for like, we basically felt that AI Insights was probably a bigger piece of work that would just sort of require the whole team. So we sort of switched people over to that, paused the sort of process on follow-ups. So we typically go like an initial scoping, a product spec. So kind of how is this product going to offer value and kind of justify that, the stories, the customers we've asked for it, this sort of thing. We turn that into a technical scope after that normally. And it was that process. We had two technical scopes ready to go. And we said like, oh, we don't really want to split the team across these because sometimes when you've got a lot more on one and it's sort of you're draining resources and you have two projects that run on longer than just having one good one, if that makes sense. So we switched to Insights. And then actually it ended up just being me really on follow-ups. When we came back to it, I picked up the scoping doc. I think Millie, one of the other engineers, was meant to join me on this, but I think she actually ended up working on, I can't remember now, something else though, but basically meant that it was pretty much me building this. I think we said 2 weeks, and I'm pretty sure it was actually around 2 weeks. It may have spilled over slightly just on the kind of verifying it was working as we released it. So we typically sort of roll stuff out, feature flag it, and kind of check. And any sort of feedback we get, we kind of fix in the last sort of stages of it. Yeah, so I think it was about 2 weeks. It wasn't too long because I think by this point, because it was the last one, we'd had a lot of practice already. And as part of the project, we sort of did dedicate a bit more time to kind of tooling. So that led to sort of when I picked up follow-ups, it was like, oh, we already have a lot of tools here now to kind of prove and test. And that meant it was easier for me anyway to happily just go about on my own trying to get it to work. So
one thing that I'm curious about, and we'll get into the sort of the uniqueness of AI across a lot of aspects, but you mentioned building out or writing up a product spec sheet. Is the process of that for an AI product unique compared to a spec sheet for basically anything else, given a lot of the uncertainties around AI and a lot of sort of the finickiness, if that's even a word, around it? Like, it's a lot of, I guess, wishful thinking, or just like, we hope that it can do this, but we're just like not super sure. So long, long way of asking, like, is it unique creating a product spec sheet for an AI product compared to any other product?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I do think it's slightly different, actually. I think they came from a point of, I would say, like, most of the time when we have a product sheet, there's been a need or a sort of demand for something, and we kind of dive into that problem. What's the source of the problem? How can we solve it? Do we agree with the problem, or do we have a different opinion on the problem? That kind of thing is like the product research, the talking to customers. I think here it's very interesting in the, like, it was like a, there was a period where we basically did ideation of AI solutions, and it was kind of a, like, what could we possibly do? And that was sort of a number of things, and there was way number of things we could have done. None of them can be proven to, like, guaranteed work, I think, because we were so unsure of AI at the time, or like the effectiveness of it. And I think, yeah, the product specs here was kind of a, it would be amazing if we could blah, 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 do these things. And that started as, like, yeah, actions, follow-ups, all these other things, like note-taking, transcriptions from videos, which is like a whole other thing. And like, can we combine this all? And it was like mega number of ideas, and it's kind of whittle it down into a very small contained piece that we can then take forward on a small project that's less risky, less impactful potentially, but equally we can prove something out. Yeah, I would say it's slightly different. And you go look, and you're like, often on our product specs, you have a, like, who's asked for this and why, and who do we go tell when we've done it? And now it's like, it's just kind of like, it would be cool if, and that was basically it. So yeah, that's slightly different than normal. Yeah.
I think this is something that came up in my conversation with Millie around suggested summaries, where she had mentioned that internally there was a bit of back and forth around exactly what this would look like. So, like, some people had the opinion that it should be maybe a little bit more heavy-handed, maybe really steering you in a certain direction. And then other people wanted what it ended up being sort of more of a light touch. So I'm wondering, was it similar for follow-ups in that you had one side saying, we want it this way, and then another side sort of on the opposite end saying, we want it sort of more heavy-handed?
I'll be honest, the technical scoping for this is quite different to what the product spec looked like at the end, like, if that makes sense. So, like, yeah, what we ended up targeting was like a very small subset. So I think there were very big ideas about what this should do, and I think then there was some very differing opinions from probably us as a team having looked at it, because we were like, hang on, we've done this already with suggested summaries and whatever, we know now limitations on this. And I think that steered quite a bit, sort of basically just removing as much as possible to keep it as simple as possible, just to prove out the sort of the worthiness of it as a feature.
I don't think
there's much opinion on, there was perhaps some discussion on, like, do we want to make the tickets, or do we want to ask people? It's that kind of thing. Like, we could have just been like, we've made you a bunch of tickets, which we thought was probably the worst way of doing it in the end, because if they're, then you don't want them to, like, come through. And a lot of people will export follow-ups automatically to their either Jira or Linear or those kind of things. Like, if you've automated that, then it's probably quite noisy to have these sort of auto, and who's going to look at them? If no one's vetted them, I imagine they'll just get ignored. So I think that was probably the only real contention point. I don't think it was too bad actually on this project, because we kind of, like I said, had done several now. So I think our opinions were quite formed on what's possible and what's not. So
yeah, for sure. I think that's a good point. Had this been the very first AI enabled feature, there probably would have been a bit more like, no we should do it this way, but like you said, exactly. This was the last one, so I think a lot of those conversations had already happened. But yeah, anyway, one thing that I've asked all of the project leads on all of these AI features is, how exactly do you align on what good looks like when, again, so many unknowns, so many variables? So when you're coming to the table and saying, hey, we want to create a suggested follow-ups feature powered by AI, it's going to look good if it does X, Y, and Z. How do you align on that?
So I think with suggested follow-ups, we had a use case where we knew that we have had previous incidents where someone has mentioned something and it's not been turned into a follow-up. So we kind of have a definitive set of, like, this is a baseline of, like, if we spot that, then we know we've done better than before. And then I think the other side of that is, like, if we make up stuff that's not real, then we know that that's bad. So I think the thing that made a big difference here in this project was, like I said, the tooling around stuff we'd already built allowed us to be like, take incidents, sort of look at our own incidents and generate effectively data from those that we can then put into our suggested follow-ups kind of model, like the sort of prompts and stuff, and get out what it would have suggested. And we knew that we had a couple, so we actually sort of asked wider in engineering, who can remember a time when they didn't remember something, which is kind of a weird question to ask, but do you remember not remembering? And we took those incidents and we were like, cool, here's a good example. And actually, when people knew we were working on the project, we sort of had any incident from that point onward when people were like, ah, that would have been a good one to have spotted because we forgot it. And like, even if people did remember, what we did was we could edit the set of data so that like, if people talked about something and then someone at the end went, oh yeah, we were meant to do that, we just edited that message out and removed the follow-up from the data. And then we see what the machine basically said the same thing. So we kind of built a library to help us test. And we actually had tooling that let us run command line prompts to sort of back and forth check. And we would tweak the prompt a bit, run the prompt, see what we get, tweak the prompt a bit, run the prompt, see what we get. And that was really, really helpful by the end of this. It was basically just kind of just a thing of think what you need to do, run it. Yeah, cool. Looks like it suggests the same things, misses the same things, like that kind of thing. That's what really sort of made that a lot easier, I think, than when we first started these projects. We sort of got in a bit of a rhythm, I think, in terms of how to do that stuff.
One thing that I wanted to ask, last time we spoke, we were talking about related incidents. And one of the things that came up there was, again, like learning the ropes of AI, which is this new sort of very abstract concept, and building a feature that is backed or powered by AI. For suggested follow-ups, did you experience the same challenges that you did for that project, especially given that this was the last project in that feature set? Like, you had already sort of been there, done that. So was building this out a little bit easier, given that you had sort of already had a hand in building out an AI feature, or was it different? Was there anything unique about suggested follow-ups?
Yeah, I think there's kind of a core set of problems that we faced on all of them, which was like sort of submitting these things to the external API and getting a response back in the right sort of time. How do we handle the events? And I think by the end, those were all kind of really probably well answered. The prompt itself, like I said, the tooling we built now kind of helps in managing that, because there's a lot of overhead. Otherwise, it's quite tedious, to be honest, trying to edit the prompt, see what it does. Oh, it's got worse. Cool. Okay. What was the random change I made that made it worse? Like that, that's kind of, I think, again, the same for suggested summaries. Those kind of things was way easier because we sort of had already dealt with it. I wouldn't say it was easy. I would say it's easier than it was the first time. I think there's still kind of a level of effort there that's you would kind of underestimate if you came to it without having done it. So I think the prompt engineering is surprisingly hard, even though you think, oh, I've done this before. Okay, I know how I would write the prompt for the previous one. I'll do the same here. Depending on the problem you're trying to solve, that prompt just may not work at all in the same way that you want. So that was kind of, I think, coming in knowing that there would be that time to spend, I think was better, because we sort of put it into the length of the project. We knew that a number of days will be spent prompt engineering, and then we'll have to run it for a bit, and then we'll probably come back and make some changes and run it again for a bit. So I think that was kind of already known. I would say the thing that was unique about this project was follow-ups are, so a suggested summary, for example, you will always want a summary of some sort. We have four areas and you want at least one of those to have a string in it. We do say, like, if there's nothing, put like no NA or nothing. With the follow-ups, we really wanted it to not suggest, always suggest three things, which is kind of the number we went for. And the sort of asking for not doing something is really hard in a prompt. And if you actually say, like, do not do thing, because you mentioned thing, it's more likely to suggest thing. So the word do not does makes no difference, really, which I think is the kind of a weird mind. You feel like you're talking to something that understands you in the prompt. And I think that's misleading, because it's not. It doesn't know, oh, okay, yeah, you said not to do that, I'm just not going to do it. It's kind of all probabilities of things. So in our case, it was like, do not suggest follow-ups that are like, have already been mentioned. So you word that by being like, create unique follow-ups that like are unrelated to other ones. Like you kind of have to word it like that. It's like you don't put do not repeat yourself, or I mean you can, but it kind of doesn't really make much of a difference, I think, for a lot of the prompts. And that was interesting, was trying to get it to suggest nothing was probably one of the most back and forth things I've done with a prompt, was like, it is okay to have a blank response. We're fine with that. Some of the prompt was actually really funny because it was like, often you will suggest nothing. Sometimes you will suggest one follow-up. Occasionally you'll suggest two, and rarely you will suggest three. And by putting that, it actually seemed to distribute a bit better. But it was like, it was such a weird back and forth with the machine trying to get it to be like, I don't want you to do this, but I can't say do not do this. So yeah, that, I mean, that illustrates some of the pain I've had probably on this project.
One thing that has become abundantly clear to me throughout all of these conversations is that with prompt engineering, you are, at least compared to other things, you're so out of control. Like you can, you know, craft your prompts a certain way, and then it's like you're going to get a specific output that's not even close to what you wanted. Or something as simple as do not do this becomes this like game of like wordsmithing and trying to figure out different ways to say don't do this. And you, I mean, the end result is the same. Like, I don't want you to do this, but you've got to like be very creative about the way that you say it. So I just thought that it was interesting and kind of funny that like all of this is just like one word can change everything.
You
have to be so intentional and clear about like what it is that you want, and even then it may not be the thing that works.
I think as well I think for some customers it probably will perform better, and for others it'll perform worse, purely because of how you talk in an incident as well. So the language you use, like we're quite deliberate about being like, we should do this in the future, or like someone should pick this up. Like we'll say those phrases, and it's very good at picking those up because you're doing a clear, like, I'm not going to do this now, but I want it to happen in the future. And that for us is the definition of a follow-up. I think for other customers, if they talk around these things differently, then it might not be as effective. So I think this is something I think probably that we should, I don't know whether you write a guide on how to talk in incidents, but like it's kind of that thing of, if you want it to be a follow-up, say the word follow-up, or be like, someone should pick this up later. That kind of, those phrases are what's going to help it spot stuff. And I think if people then talk, sort of don't say that and talk about everything, you'll either get lots of suggestions or no suggestions. So it, and it's hard to write something that will accommodate all of that in like a, describe, like it would have to be like, describe to me your typical incident as an organization and like try and work out how to re-engineer the prompt temporarily for you. Yeah, it's very odd. I don't know how you really deal with that. So
yeah, that actually got me thinking, when we're testing something like suggested follow-ups, we're testing with sort of our use cases, you know, we're using prompts that we've come up with in-house, so on and so forth, and we ship it out. But how do you account for customers' use cases and customers' prompts? Like, we've only tested this as far as sort of our walls, but once it's out there, like, who knows how it's going to perform, because the way that you're asking questions isn't going to be the same way that everybody else is asking questions. So how does that factor in to the sort of building process?
I think this is again one of those things where like other projects we typically would maybe have more distinct, like, this is correct, this is not. Typically we have been like, who is happy to try and test these AI features, and we will roll that out to kind of a couple of customers first. And again, we rely on quite heavily on sort of pulse channels where, like, as events happen, we can see these things. And often when we roll a feature out, all eyes are on the pulse channel to see like what people are doing. And here is, we sort of, because you can mark a bad suggestion, so you can say like, nope, this was horrible, or yes, or yes, and I'd like to edit it is the other thing. We kind of have to like, push it out, see the performance and kind of tweak on that, and talk to customers. If we see them saying like, no, a lot of the time, be like, what's not happening for you? Why are these not quite right? And then we can kind of fake the data that would give us a good example of what they're seeing, and then run again the prompt on that a bit. So we sort of, again, rely on dog feeding a lot, which kind of, like you said, skews us to the way we work. I think we're quite opinionated on the way we work, which is probably come from a position of we think we're probably not doing things terribly. So if it works for us, it should work for other people. I think that's kind of our baseline. And then it's like, yeah, how can we measure and prove one way or the other that it's helping other people? So here it was like, we have dashboards and we track a lot of data where we're like, what percentage of follow-ups are being created by AI versus which ones are created by people? And like the percentage we should see effectively, hopefully more are made by AI over time. So it kind of goes like that. And the number made by people, it reduces. And of the AI ones, how many do we make suggestions for that are like accepted, declined, and then also accepted with edits? So like, are we close, but not quite? And like, is the content not quite right? And I don't think we actually put this on a dashboard, but we can tell if someone has actioned the follow-up. So if they've marked it as complete. So a good measure there is like, are suggestions we make completed? Which would imply that they were correct at the time. If they're not completed, were they stupid in some way? Or despite the user sort of saying, yeah, they never end up doing it or they cancel it. So being able to look at that like percentage of like suggestions we have made that were accepted, are they done and finished? So it's kind of all those things combine, and effectively it's a waiting game in some respect with this kind of project, annoyingly. Just because you have such a wide variety of potential outcomes and inputs and everything, it's very hard to test before you put it out.
Yeah. And obviously it's impossible to account for all of them and all of this subtle nuances and variations and, you know, all of that. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we also have some fun stuff, which is like, we had this with summaries where I made a change not too long ago where if you speak in another language, it will translate that. And then it was returning you an English summary, even though you spoke in Portuguese or or Spanish or even Japanese, like, which is mind-blowing that it does that, because it's not meant to do that, really. That's not the intent. It's not a translation service, but it works well enough. So we made a change where I made the prompt try and tell what the language is that the incident is in and to respond in the same language. Which was crazy. Like, I don't tell the user to pick a language. It just kind of looks at the language used and does it. Right now with follow-ups, we didn't roll that out yet to follow-ups as well. But we had, people talking in French, and it will come up with follow-ups in English, which is like, I mean, at least it's suggesting follow-ups, which is better than not. But yeah, ideally we could do the same there. So that's something we'll probably look at as well. But I'm blown away by like unintended benefits of using these models is that it just understands language regardless of language. Like it's crazy.
Yeah. Under the hood, it's all so fascinating. what I wanted to touch on was, you mentioned customers. Design partners are obviously a big part of everything that we build here at Incident.io. How did they factor into this conversation?
We already at this point had a kind of a good group of customers who were happy to test these things. So they'd already had summaries. They'd already been testing out the AI assistant, so chatting away with that. So I think we basically just use those as we'll turn it on for these accounts, try and gauge some feedback on how they're going, whether they're successful or not, just sitting down with the customers when we can and chatting to them. If we saw, like I said, people saying no a lot, being like proactively reaching out and be like, how could we have made that better? Or what was it about it that was missing? And I think some early feedback was like, oh, it didn't suggest something, but that's because we spoke about it on the Zoom call. I'm like, well, okay, we're not listening to your Zoom call. So yes, that makes perfect sense. And I think then the thing was like, well, can it listen to the Zoom call? Was like the next question, which comes back to this like transcription and like, can we pull in more data to try and do more for you? Which has been a common thing with customers of just like, this is great, but I wanted to do like even more, which is a cool problem to have, but sort of a bit daunting when you're like, okay, I need to plug in everything now to the AI.
Yeah. So. On that note, like, is it easy to, or I guess tempting is a better word, to have this list of feedback and want to action it right away and say, this wasn't on the roadmap, but like, this actually is a really good idea. We should just do that. But I guess the issue with that is that you may end up pushing something that you already had on your roadmap to the side in favor of doing this one thing. And then you sort of get further and further and further away from building sort of the ideal product that you had in mind. But again, I can imagine, like, I hear all the time customers bring up some really, really, really valid points and bits of feedback that, like, we'd be, you know, kind of silly to not action. But again, I can imagine that it's a bit of a slippery slope.
Yeah, I think when you're mid-project, and you sort of start getting that feedback, it's actually very informative, because your idea of what is useful may be completely different to the customers, and you've blinkered yourself into the world of your solution. So I think then when you get that feedback, it's often a really good point to pause, step back, look across everything that you're doing, and be like, actually, is the solution we're going for suitable still? And we've had this on some projects, like related incidents was kind of similar, where like early feedback was like, it's not as useful because we didn't do the recency thing. So we didn't narrow the search. So that did change ultimately what we were aiming for. And I think here, there wasn't too much really that sort of drastically changed stuff. But I would say generally, it is very tempting. Yeah, it's kind of like, you want to please the customer, you want to try and build something cool. And you're like, oh, that is a great idea. Yeah, we should totally have done that. I think yeah, you have to be careful, but I think we're pretty good at being like, is that suggestion better than what we were going to do? And can we fit it in the time still? And if we can, then we may as well do it. Like, I think we're pretty open to iterating tightly on something. So mid-project being like, yeah, we can change that. And we often have, even internally, we do a thing called like a polish party, which is typically often from a UX UI perspective of like, this is what it looks like, this is how you're going to use it, and you get kind of critiqued, but less aggressive. It's more of a friendly thing where you will, yeah, you'll put this idea forward and have feedback from other teams where they've not even seen it yet, and you get very raw feedback on stuff. And I think going to customers is kind of very similar of like, here you go, here's the thing, here's how I think you would use it. And they go, that doesn't make sense to me. Why would I use it like that? Like, that feedback is very, very good and should be used then and there. I think it would be silly of us to be like, I'm just going to finish stuff like as it is and then sort of take that on board. But in terms of additional features, yeah, it is very tempting. Often I think we do try and squeeze them in right at the end because we're like, oh, I'm in the code right now in this area. I could just go like, there's a little extra PR here. I'll just pull some code here and do that. And yeah, we'll probably add it to like a list of like tickets at the end of the project, kind of the final polish if we can. If it's something bigger, then yeah, we'll probably put it on the roadmap and be like, can we just get to this quicker if it makes a difference? So
yeah. And I think that's the important thing we're building for our customers. And if it all it takes is, you know, a few hours of work to make even one customer's experience that much better, like, it's like, I've seen the evidence to suggest that we will do it. So I can imagine, you know, across the board, customers are very grateful for that. And at the end of the day, it results in a much better product that accommodates so many different use cases. Because you never know, you build something for one customer, another customer finds out that this is something that you built for this person, and it's like, wait, I actually want that. That sounds really cool. I'm going to start using it. And it's like a sort of a ripple effect. But I wanted to end on how all of this actually works on the back end. So how do suggested follow-ups work from a sort of technical perspective?
Yeah, it's actually really similar to summaries, which is interesting in that you have a set of incident data that we have, which is kind of summaries, updates. Interesting for suggested follow-ups, we also need Slack messages. If anything, they're the kind of key point to this, because it's those chats that are happening, kind of where things are going to get missed. And we also look at things like if you have integration with, say, GitHub and things like that, and or your Linear, Jira, any of your ticket trackers, we will take those bits of information about, like, have you already made a follow-up? Have you already made an action? What's the state of that thing? And we kind of build this big wodge of data again. It's kind of like, here is everything that's happened in the incident. We think these things are really important. And we turn that into basically a prompt where we're like saying, I'm going to give you all of this data. You need to go pass it in this way. do not do the following, please do the following. And then we just go like, blah, 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 blah. And then we ask, we sort of, when the incident is closed, an event will fire saying, hey, I'm closed. We go, cool. Okay, now's the time to try processing it, build that list. And asynchronously, we talk to our ML model, just submit the data, get back in a JSON format, kind of a suggestion. And that suggestion will be either an empty array or up to three. Technically, I think it can actually return you more because AI is wonderful and does that. So we sort of take that thing, try and parse it. If it isn't even valid JSON, forget it. If it is, count it. Take the first three and turn those into our representation internally of follow-ups. And then we go and post a message in Slack saying, hey, here's a number of things that we think we found that perhaps you missed. And we show them, they have a couple of buttons underneath, which is like accept and edit or decline. And if you accept and edit, we basically take you to the normal follow-up modal. The interesting thing here is we actually ask in the prompt, can the AI take the message that made it suggest this follow-up? So we say, alongside suggesting what you should do, can you please give me the context of that message of like why you've done this? And it actually is interesting because it doesn't just copy the message. It will interpret it into a sentence of like, it'd be like, Rob mentioned he needed to do this. So this sounds important. And it kind of words it like that. We actually just take that and we just straight up show it in the context above the follow-up being like, this is what the machine thought. Is it true? And you get some very funny suggestions where people have potentially been a little bit angry in an incident. And it's like, Rob, swear word, the thing, da, 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 like Rob showed anger at the following. So maybe in the future we should fix that. That kind of thing is, it kind of happily does that, which is quite funny. It's also interesting what it deems a swear word because it actually blanked out, like it put like a little hashes and symbols for one of them as well, which is quite funny. But we take that. We show that to you. If you make it a follow-up, cool. We register that it was AI-generated versus human-generated. Like I said, we want all these statistics. And then we just, yeah, the normal process. If it gets exported, it gets exported. And yeah, that's about it. For summaries, you can now generate summaries on demand without having it trigger. And we have had a lot of people ask, can I like deliberately run the follow-ups command? Because I know I've got a bunch there and I just want to get them out. Like, I don't want to close the incident, but I just want the follow-ups created. It's kind of very similar to our other projects in that respect. We have a kind of a almost code template of how to lay these out now, being like, here's a prompt. These are all the methods you need to implement on that interface to make it work. Here's, and one of those methods is like, build me the data. One of them's filter out the bad data. One of them's, should I actually run the prompt? Because if we've already suggested follow-ups, we probably don't want to suggest them again. Like if you go back and forth in your incident status or like, yeah, all various sort of checks and balances to kind of make sure that we run it at the right point and record them properly. So,
gotcha. That makes sense. And last question. Follow-ups has been live and in the wild for a few weeks now. And I can imagine during that time, we've collected a bunch of feedback. So what's next? Are there certain things that customers keep bringing up or things that we've noticed internally that we're like, oh, okay, we'd like to iterate on that or, you know, whatever else. So yeah, what's next for follow-ups?
I think people wanted a, rather than a like, this is a bad suggestion button, a like skip button. And we've had someone point out, they would say like, they felt bad saying it was a bad suggestion. Like it wasn't a bad suggestion. It was just not a follow-up I would do right now. Like I didn't want to record it, but it was a good point. They kind of, and they, people obsess over clicking all the buttons as well, which is an interesting thing because we thought people just leave stuff like that. You don't need to respond or interact with it. But a lot of people have been like, oh, I want to click one of the buttons, but I don't want to click bad suggestion. Like, I need to make sure everything has been actioned in a weird way. So those were kind of that sort of, and make it more obvious was the other ask of like, how can we push people to spot this who aren't the incident lead? So can we put it just straight in the channel? Can we sort of make it more obvious? Can we show it elsewhere? Can I have this in the dashboard is another ask. So like, this is currently only in Slack, but if I had to, could I go to the dashboard and be like, suggest me some follow-ups for this incident from there, which I think is very doable. We could do that quite easily. So yes, those kind of things. I think we haven't had much feedback about them being terrible, which is great. That would be depressing otherwise. we had some good feedback on like this saved me, had spotted this thing that I'd totally forgotten was super important. So that was nice to hear. I know internally we've had that a lot where it's just like, oh crap, yeah, I forgot that entirely. That was great. So I think it's one of the hit rate on success for these is very different to summaries. I'd say summaries, the success rate, like the acceptance rate is quite high. Now, I think we've got those to a point where people are like, if anything, writing a summary is more painful now than reading an AI one, which I think is a great position to be in. Like, if it's easier for me to just let the machine do it than me to think, that's great. And follow-ups are kind of a bit more hit and miss, I think. Just as we said, the nature of like all of the possible inputs, all of the possible things you could have said and how you said them will probably over-suggest. Like, it's very keen to suggest things. And that means that inevitably you're going to have a lot more like, nah, nah, nah. Like, but it's the one time that it does spot the thing, you're like, ah, okay, yeah, that's a good one. And so I think the hit to noise is probably a little bit different to summaries. And that's, personally, it feels a bit bad when you see all the little crosses in our pulse channel of people going, no, no, no. And you're like, my AI is rubbish. But actually, when you look at like overall acceptance rate, it's okay, which is, and just accepting that, yeah, it's not perfect and it never will be, I think is probably the way we have to sit. And I've got to personally internalize that as a how AI works. So yeah, that's my challenge for for the next months.